All right, Mr. Simpson, would you please stand and face the jury?
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Orenthal James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder.
Hurt.
The hurt may last longer than Pete Rose hopes. He's been banned from the game of baseball for life. This was a sad day for baseball and one of the game's greatest players.
Steve, I just want to apologize for what happened out there. But I had no intention on hurting you. And I feel awful for what transpired.
Mr. Osuna's remorseful. The circumstances are what they are, but at the end of the day, in the criminal court, I've said it more than once that his intention is to plead not guilty.
The NSR Media Network and Destination CPD presents Out of the Court, where the worlds of sports and law collide. And now, here are criminal lawyers Adam Goodman and Scott Callen, alongside your host, Barry Davis.
Well, gentlemen, this week we're going to talk about something. We've touched on hazing before, but this is a story more about a broadcaster that kind of not only made light of the situation, but found humor in it and how it affected somebody that had been hazed before. And just to give our listeners a little bit of an update or a little bit of a background on this story, there was a broadcast of a Winnipeg Jets game recently. And the play-by-play guy or the color commentator during that game, a guy by the name of Kevin Sawyer, made some comments during the broadcast. And he was talking about some hazing that happened back in the minor leagues to a player by the name of Jared Spurgeon. And this was with the Spokane Chiefs of the Western League. And he said, my favorite Jared Spurgeon story, he said, he was 15 years old, 2 months into the season. We saran-wrapped him to a pillar in the arena about 6 feet in the air. He was tiny. He looked like he was 12. Sawyer was an assistant coach with Spokane at the time. And the thing is, okay, first of all, knowing now what we know about hazing and everything that's come out, is there a certain sense of responsibility and decorum that broadcasters should have, even though this guy found it funny at the time, and maybe it was looked at as just harmless fun. But do people, when they are talking on the air and they have the microphone, Adam, should there be a sense of responsibility in not making this seem to be a light, fun thing when it's a very serious a thing that's happening now?
The role of a broadcaster is first and foremost to report the news. And some, if you're doing commentary, giving your opinion, sometimes it goes beyond that. But I think the most important thing is to report on what actually happened. And to take it to the next step, it is inserting yourself more so into the situation. And I think it's very important if you saw something like this happened on a field of play for you to report it. But to then make light of it and to make it into a joke, I think that's going outside your role of being a broadcaster, and to say that this is okay and you're becoming more of a satirist or political commentator. And I do have issue with that. But really, Barry, you're the broadcaster here.
Well, yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I don't think there's any place for him to be doing that. And here's the problem we run into. And Scott, you and I are kind of a similar age, and you and I are kind of in that area where we've lived through both sides. We lived through a time where, and you and I had an episode recently where we talked about touch, appropriate and inappropriate touch, and things that were okay many years ago aren't okay. So, you know, from his standpoint, the broadcaster Sawyer, maybe he's talking from a point of when this happened, it wasn't looked at as a bad thing. We all just enjoyed it. It was good fun boys being boys. But, you know, do we have to really concentrate, Scott, on where we draw the line and knowing that even though it was okay then, it's not okay now?
It's tricky because, yeah, the broadcaster, should he not share his stories of his junior hockey days? I think he should. I think that's part of his job, to talk about what it's like coming up, what happened to him when he came through the ranks. And we don't want to muzzle him. However, your point about him being, you know, celebrating this and being seemingly unaware that what he's reporting here is abusive behavior. He's talking about someone else being humiliated, put it in danger. You got saran wrap around your body. You're up in the air. The fact that he doesn't recognize that is troubling to me. If someone wants to report on their own abuse, let's say, and say, this is what happened to me. We want people to do that. We want exposure of dark corners. We don't want people to feel they can't speak out. But if someone in a broadcast role, in a where they enjoy a positive role model position, we don't want them to be perpetuating it by normalizing it. So that's the tension there, I think.
Can something be done about this hazing that happened all these years ago? Now that this broadcaster has made it public, now that it's out there, somewhere there is audio evidence of him saying this, is this something that authorities could start to look into and say, we've got a case against those that were involved in saran wrapping this kid up? Even if at the time the kid didn't say anything, and even if to this day, if you were to talk to the kid and he would say, you know, he's an adult now, oh yeah, it was just all good fun. But is there anything that can be done about this?
Sure. If he says it's in good fun, then you really don't, you know, that sort of cleanses it a little bit. If that's his position, if in hindsight he didn't feel harmed by it, then that does take the teeth out of it. But like any crime that happened at any time, if the evidence is there and the public interest in prosecuting is there, then sure. I would really question, is that the best way to heal? If that's what happened to this young man, maybe that young man, that was his last game because he was scared to go back. And that would be a real shame if he ended his hockey career at age 15 when he had promised because of misconduct. The other side of this, though, is you said where we draw the line. What about making people run in the snow? The rookie has to run jogging in the snow. It's really cold out and he has to do that as a level of fitness proving or
right.
Proving your hardiness. Those things aren't necessarily negative. Or maybe the rookies have to do some, less appealing tasks, like clean up the jock straps or, I don't know, is that so bad? I
mean, I'll bring up an example that happened with the Blue Jays maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And they called it rookie hazing. And one year, and this actually happened a couple of times, where all the rookies at the end of a road game in Boston, all dressed up in Hooters uniforms, like a Hooters server, and they had to walk from the clubhouse through Fenway Park, onto the bus, through the airport, and onto the plane. And again, at the time, nobody blinked an eye. We had our cameras rolling on. It was all good fun. Everybody thought it was hilarious. But if one of those players today came out and said, I was humiliated by that, it has affected me mentally for all these years, can something be done about it now?
That's the danger in these type of things. In that example, you're not describing anything criminal. You're describing maybe something that gets to the level of harassment. The danger in some of these things is we don't know how individuals are going to take it on a personal level.
But we didn't care 10 years ago.
We didn't care 10 years ago. But the point you make is maybe it did affect somebody. And 10 years ago or longer, the response to that would have been, well, toughen up. But now that we're learning more about how certain behaviors can affect people in the long term, we're becoming a little more sensitive to that. And there are still some out there that would listen to what I just said and said, Goodman, toughen up. I like to look at things from the perspective is there a possibility of somebody being victimized or feeling victimized here? And if there is, then we need to rethink the behavior.
Well, is there anything in the law, guys, that says that after a certain amount of years, you can no longer bring something up that was ignored then, looked at as nothing wrong, and now because of the way the world has changed, someone says, okay, that act that happened in 1985 is not acceptable in 2020. So now I'm going to, and we hear about this when you hear about actors or people in Hollywood that are accused of doing something 20 years ago, where at the time, you know, it was, I'm not saying it was a good thing, but it wasn't looked at the way it is now. People didn't complain about it back then. But is there anything in the law? Is there a certain amount of time that can go by? Or can you bring up something from 40 years ago and say, this happened, I've got proof of it?
crimes, yes. There's no statute of limitations on crimes that are prosecuted by indictment, meaning essentially serious crimes. And just about every crime, but for the least serious, you can prosecute them by indictment. So, for instance, sexual assault.
But hazing in a dressing room wasn't necessarily a crime then, was it?
No. So if it's not a crime, then there are things called statute of limitations for civil action. But some of those have exceptions in them that the statute, the time frame, doesn't even start running until the harm is materialized. So if I punch you in the head and I civilly wrong you with an assault, and you don't sue me and don't charge me criminally, and you don't realize for 10 years that I caused you a brain injury, that you don't realize it because it just didn't materialize, or it wasn't discovered, or the symptoms weren't fully formed, then your clock won't start ticking until you should have known that you had a case against me. So these are malleable concepts, but the answer to your question is yes, there are time limits on some things, and there's no time limits on other things like crimes.
And that's the thing. I mean, we're using this former kid as an example that was saran wrapped to the pillar. And, you know, Adam, maybe at the time he didn't think anything of it. And now these years later, maybe he's unemployed or he's going through depression and he, you know, sees a psychologist and they say, you know, he tells the stories of his past and it comes out that was the turning point where everything went sour in his life. Like, does he have a case to say this incident that happened back then, even though it wasn't a crime, has ruined my life?
You'd have to look into the civil sphere and decide if somebody can be sued for breaching what's called a duty of care to them, committing what's called a tort, and whether or not they suffered quantifiable damages as a result. And if those things can be proven and there's no statute of limitations, then yes.
That must be hard to prove, though.
It's what you're describing does sound difficult.
Right? I mean, look, we saw over the last year the whole situation that happened at St. Mike's. And you mentioned statute of limitations. And we know the kids that were the victims of that. But, and you know, Scott, I touched on this with the Gordon Stuckless story. If more victims come out in another year that maybe were just too scared to come out, and now seeing what's transpired, maybe they feel more confident coming out. Could those boys from St. Mike's face even more trouble if more victims come out now?
Yes, they could, because it's new allegations of criminal activity. So they could absolutely be arrested and charged and tried for them.
If it was more of the same, though, in
well, exactly. I'm not so sure sentencing would necessarily change. It just might be more charges.
We did talk about this in the Stuckless episode. If it was full on sexual assault, yes, they get prosecuted totally separately. With youth, the boys being that age in St. Mike's, I'd like to think that the fact that they've put the matter behind them would hold more weight. If it was just more of the same type of behavior, but really, there's a big bright line between crimes and other inappropriate behavior. Hazing, such as like insulting or belittling and demeaning type behavior, like the Babcock story we talked about at the end of 2019, there's a bright line there where one is not tolerable and one is debatable.
And here's the thing, too. I don't know if, like, I grew up in a world where I was told sticks and stones might break my bones and words can never hurt me. But now it's been proven by some psychologists that words can hurt you. And again, we're in a totally different life, totally different way of living in this world. But yet it seems sports, when you get into a dressing room or a clubhouse with a sports team, the clocks don't move. And a lot of this stuff that we talk about on the surface is still going on. And for me, I find it very disturbing, and it's also a very confusing time because the world is moving in a certain way, but it seems that with sports, a lot of things have just stayed the way they were, and we're going to see a lot of things just kept quiet now that we saw. But again, with social media, it brings a whole new thing into it. And like, let me ask you, while I mention that, has social media added, like, how much of a new wrinkle has social media added to law and to be able to prove cases and to be able to use that in a courtroom? Can you literally pull up an Instagram video and say, here's the proof that something happened?
If you can prove the source of the video, and it appears to be a legitimate video, and when it was made, things like that. Putting that aside, text messages and videos and Instagram and Facebook posts has become very, very useful evidence in courtrooms. There's entire bodies of law on how we deal with this type of evidence.
The problem is sometimes with that type of social media, people can hide. You know what I mean? You may never find who the perpetrator is because they can hide behind,
In cases of cyberbullying, yes, you can. We've all seen those Twitter accounts that can't be identified, the people trolling. But often what we see is people that know each other, where something, a crime might have happened elsewhere, and a lot of the evidence to prove or even disprove that actual crime can be found looking at text messages and social media posts and Facebook. People will often use social media to criminally harass others, and in cases like that, you usually know who's the criminal harasser because there's the background between the two individuals.
And, you know, Adam, it wasn't that long ago that, I'm trying to remember her name, the host Jessica, Jess from the TV show that had those comments about boys playing hockey.
From The View.
From
Jessica
The View.
Allen.
Jessica
that
Allen.
That was a very controversial statement that she made. A lot of people were very upset. I do think what she said was maybe somewhat taken out of context in the way that she said it. Where she was relating her own life experiences.
Do you think, though, that what we have seen, the St. Mike story and all these stories of the hazing and the bullying, has kind of given her the fuel to say what she said?
That's what you wonder. As I said a few seconds ago, she needed to maybe think twice about the way she said it, but what her point was that she has seen this type of behavior amongst groups of athletes and amongst young people, either high school or early junior age. And it's something that we need to look at and address.
If hockey was unfairly singled out as a sport full of bullies, and it meant that young children weren't playing hockey as much, then her comments were hurtful because they unfairly maligned hockey. I don't think that's the case, though. I don't think hockey is being unfairly singled out, and I think hockey's alive and well. So then you ask yourself, what's the downside of her comments? Well, there really isn't one. The upside of her comments is do better, be kinder, be more thoughtful, be aware of how things that might seem harmless to some people aren't, and do better. That's what I see as the consequence of her calling people
out. Was the racial elements that she added in that upset people, where she said you're just obnoxious white boys and
privileged white boys to boot.
Yeah, so that's what really upset people, that sort of changed the context of what her point was, which is sometimes athletes have this macho way of behaving and people get hurt as a result.
See, when I was a kid, I played sports and I played organized sports, and it was always a fear of mine that something like this was going to happen. You know, even in a fun way, you know, they were going to pull off my clothes and throw me in a shower or do something to humiliate me. And, you know, being a little guy, I did experience bullying a lot. Scott, you've got two teenage boys. Have they ever had any apprehension for sports, or have they ever experienced anything? Or if they had, would they tell you if they'd seen anything like that, any kind of hazing?
I'm happy to say no, and neither did I. I played
really
softball. I was on a traveling racing ski team, where we slept over on the floor of lodges and had a lot of close bonding and a lot of making fun of and things like that. And I don't remember it ever being to the point of something that was overall negative. Some of the making fun of might have been.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is there a difference? Is there a fine line between teasing and hazing?
I think there. I don't know if it's a fine line. I think it's more of a bright line. I think we can recognize when something is hurtful and not rapport building, by, you know, going through experiences together. We did dry land training for skiing, where you had to really push yourself by running up hills, and we would rib each other for falling back on a run or for not doing as many push-ups as the other person. And those sort of things, I never felt they were unhealthy. And that was.
But what if one of the kids was affected by that, Scott?
Well, they might have been, and that's where that's where you don't have bright lines, because
we didn't think about it. We didn't care back then. It didn't even dawn on us that what we're saying might have a profound impact on the future of one of our friends.
It might have dawned on you more than you think, Barry, because a lot of things are about context growing up. And sometimes teenagers, and we could maybe do a future show on teenage brain development.
And
there's great studies on the frontal lobe development and why teens tend to make poor choices. Sometimes they don't understand that context. If I made a joke about Scott being very tall, for example, he'd probably take it in good fun.
Or bald.
Or bald. But there are...
I think I just upset him.
No, but there are others who wouldn't. And there are others who would take that very personally. And there is the kid in the room who does get bullied, who has had these social issues. And teens sometimes have a problem identifying who that kid is or recognize that young person and because of their own issues, decide to go ahead and victimize that person. So it's figuring out what the context is. Is this just good-natured fun with somebody who is an equal to me, or is it harming somebody who is not an equal to me? And that's the type of thing that I think teens need to learn, and that's why we need to prevent teams as a whole allowing this type of behavior to happen, because then it becomes this group gang mentality.
Yeah, and that's the real hard thing, guys, because, you know, a lot of, and again, I was a boy growing up. I wasn't a girl, so I don't know what it was like to be around a group of girls. But I know with a group of guys, part of the bonding is the teasing and making fun of each other, but it was all done in good fun. And, you know, I would joke about you, Scott. You would joke about me, Adam. You would say something, and we would all go back and forth, and it would all be in good fun. At least that's what we all thought. But now I think that whole element of the bonding between a group of friends has changed, where you really have to, and it's like we talked about before in the episode about touch, you almost have to ask, is it okay if we poke fun at each other?
Barry, there's a fantastic movie from Matt Damon early in his career called School Ties. And he was a fantastic football quarterback, and he gets recruited to this private high school for, I guess, his grade 12 senior year. And everybody loves him because how good he is. But he's also the Jewish person. And this was a community that turned on him and made fun of him for being the Jew. And that wasn't good. What we saw in the movie wasn't good-natured ribbing. And, like, yeah, it's funny that Scott is bald and tall, but you need to know what to make fun of somebody for and what not
to make
somebody
for. And we also know Scott well enough to know that he's not going to be hurt by it. He knows we're having fun. At least we hope we know he's having fun.
But that's part of the problem,
I'm
too.
I'm happy to say that you're right, but you don't always know is Adam's point.
Exactly.
So, you know, when my ski coach said, run faster, you weakling, he was inspiring me to push myself. But what if my abusive father had called me weakling, right? That might have really triggered something in me. Right now, I didn't have an abusive father, and I wasn't called weakling, but I don't think my ski coach called me that either. But what you run that risk. So you do have a duty to know each other and to be a little bit better. You talked about buddies ribbing each other. And, yeah, it can be fun to call your guy friends jackass and, you know, and be insulting and have ribbing. But have you tried the opposite? I'm sure you have, because it actually kind of works better. When you say to a male friend, you know, it's really important that you're my friend. I'm really thank you for your friendship, as opposed to saying Merry Christmas, jackass, which can be fine, too. I'm not saying it's not. But try the opposite. Like, that's my point about what's the downside. What's the downside in being kinder and being more thoughtful? What, we're going to push each other a little bit less hard? We're going to seek less excellence through our athletic endeavors? Really? Maybe not, actually. Maybe positive reinforcement is better. I saw a thing a little while ago that I'd like to wrap up the episode with this. I think it's really important. It was someone who was in the spirit of, quote-unquote, supporting the troops. And they wrote this meme, which was, in 1944, 18-year-olds stormed the beaches at Normandy. And in 2015, now they demand safe spaces. As if to say that our generation was soft and that our grandparents were much stronger than us. But my question to that person, as much as that is an effective, you know, rhetoric, perhaps, what do you think those guys were fighting for but a better society, a kinder society, a place you could feel safe? What exactly is the offense in asking for safe spaces, right? Isn't that what a soldier would want for his grandson? that maybe in two generations, they'll feel safer at school, they'll feel happier in life. So I like to keep those things in mind when I analyze these questions.
Well, guys, once again, we've hit on a pretty hot-button topic, and I don't think we really have a definitive answer as to, you know, what is right, what is wrong, what is acceptable, what is not acceptable. I think, again, a lot of times what we put out there and the intent we have doesn't always matter. It's how it's received by the other end. And you could be just doing something lighthearted and having fun, but if the other person doesn't find it's fun, that's where the trouble is. Gentlemen, Scott, Adam, thank you so much. As always, this courtroom has been adjourned.